Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org and podcasting at santaferadiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. And we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. I'm very happy now to welcome back to the program Dr. John Fogarty. He's a family physician and he works with New Energy Economy. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte.
So we're continuing on with programs on climate change. We're having another show today talking about this because it is such an active issue right now in New Mexico. The Environmental Improvement Board, which we talked about, when was it, in August?
Yeah.
Was considering a proposal, now is considering another proposal for dealing with climate change. This has been going on for some time. Tell us about this whole saga of dealing with climate change on a state level in New Mexico.
Well, this is an exciting week. The Environmental Improvement Board has been hearing two petitions, two proposals about how to do something on climate change. These proposals have been winding their ways through the courts. Going back almost 2 years ago, New Energy Economy put forward a proposal to cap emissions in New Mexico, a modest proposal. We're proposing to reduce emissions by 3% a year for the next 3 years and then have the board reevaluate it. It's just an effort to get us started going in the right direction to start reducing emissions. Again, this proposal has been going on for several years. We've had to overcome numerous legal challenges. We actually had to take the case all the way to the New Mexico Supreme Court, where they ruled in our favor, and they said, yes, this case should be heard. The Environmental Improvement Board now has heard our proposal over the past couple months, and they're winding up the hearings tomorrow. Tomorrow will be the last day of testimony. And I encourage all your listeners, there's still an opportunity to get out there and be able to voice their concern about what's happening with climate change, voice their concern about what should be done here in New Mexico.
Today and tomorrow.
Correct. Tonight at 7 o'clock at the old Para building, which is a block east of the Capitol, the Roundhouse. It's at 1120 Paseo de Peralta. They can come out at 7 p.m. and they can speak about the opportunities to create a new energy economy, create clean energy here in New Mexico, speak about the impacts that they're seeing on climate change, speak about what America and what New Mexico should be doing to solve global warming.
And that's tonight and tomorrow at 7 o'clock. People can come out.
Absolutely. And over the past 6 months, we've had literally hundreds of people coming out. We had hearings up in Farmington where 30 Navajos came out and said, we're seeing the impacts already from climate change. We see the opportunity if we were to develop solar energy, develop wind energy on Navajo lands. There were hearings down in Las Cruces where business leaders came out and said, this is really the future for New Mexico. We can create clean energy, we can create new jobs, and it can really be the economic engine that drives our economy in the next decade.
So the science is definitive, and we've talked about that, but the opposition is still saying that climate change doesn't even exist. I mean, the denial is unbelievable.
Well, it's really extraordinary, and I think back to the various movements that have happened over the centuries, and I think about Mahatma Gandhi when he was leading the independence movement in India, and he said that there were four stages to a movement. The first stage, they ignore you. The second, they laugh at you, they ridicule you. The third, they fight you. And the fourth, you win. And we're right now in the middle of the third stage. The opponents to action on climate change, they ignored doing anything on climate change. You look back in the 1980s, James Hansen testified numerous times before Congress, the prominent scientist for NASA. And Congress politely said, well, that's interesting, but they did nothing. And then the opposition started laughing and ridiculing climate scientists, saying, oh, look, we all exhale CO2. There's nothing to be concerned about. But now they're entering the stage where they're fighting us. And the opposition's spending literally tens of millions of dollars trying to fight any action on climate change. They were successful in Congress this last year. They stopped any climate legislation from moving forward. And now big money, such as the money from the Koch brothers, they're reaching into states to try to stop any action. They're trying to stop action here in New Mexico, and they're trying to stop action in states like California.
I think one thing that it's part of human psychology up to a point, but we tend to wait for horrible crises before we actually do anything. And if you wait for the really horrible crises to happen with climate change, it'll be too late. How do you get people to think about prevention?
Well, I think if you look at the best available science, and you go to the most reputable organizations, and you look at what they're saying, they're all saying the same thing. We need to take action. We need to do something on climate change. And again, these are organizations that conservatives, Tea Partiers, progressives, liberals, Democrats, Republicans, we all should be taking seriously. For example, the Department of Defense this year, they release every 4 years a quadrennial review on defense. And this year they said they devoted an entire chapter to climate change and threats from climate change, saying there are going to be displacements of hundreds of millions of people because of rising sea levels, because of drought, because of famine, because of food insecurity. And this is something that the United States needs to take very seriously from a security standpoint. Then you have other organizations like Sandia National Labs. They just released a report this summer saying the economic impacts from climate change in the United States are going to be extraordinary. Perhaps as many as 7 million jobs will be lost in the United States because of climate change.
What kind of jobs?
Jobs related to the energy industry, jobs related to the fossil fuel industry. If we don't do anything, other countries are starting to move ahead. We're actually going to be buying solar panels from China. We already are. We're going to be buying wind turbines from Europe. We already are. And we're falling behind right now. We're not doing our best to be able to move ahead on the solutions to climate change while other countries are racing ahead.
When we did the series in August, one of the things that was really striking to me was job losses in New Mexico would come from things, like if we don't do anything, would come from basically the results of what happens when you don't have adequate water supply in your rivers and to water your crops. So basically you lose jobs in farming, you lose jobs in recreation, and you lose any hope of development, of making the state a bigger state, because we don't have enough water to let new people move in.
Yeah, and I think that's a big, big, big issue for New Mexico. Again, if you look at the reports that are coming from the Department of Defense, there was a report that came out several years ago that said that the Southwest United States is going to be the first and most negatively impacted because of climate change, and in fact may face what are called, quote, dust bowl conditions. So we're talking about losing an entire industry here in New Mexico, the farming industry. We're also, the ranching industry will be very negatively impacted. The fishing industry, which is a huge industry for New Mexico, we're going to be losing native species of trout. And that's already happening. There's a lot of anglers up in arms saying we need to be doing something right now on climate change. So you're right. There's multiple impacts, both in the energy industry and also in tourist industry, from farming to ranching. It really affects all sectors of our economy.
We're talking to Dr. John Fogarty. So we have an odd political situation in which Democrats, some of them are speaking up very vociferously, some of them are mediocre, and Republicans are essentially united in their denial that this is even a problem to be faced, much less having solutions in facing it.
Yeah, if you look around the country right now, many conservatives, Tea Party candidates are ridiculing action on climate change. And Thomas Friedman actually had an insightful opinion piece of a couple weeks ago where he said, in the United States, we have turned the issue of climate change into a four-letter word, and that four-letter word is J-O-K-E, joke. In China, they're turning it into a four-letter word, which is J-O-B-S, jobs, and China is leading the race. They're investing heavily in batteries. They're investing heavily in solar and wind. Just a few years ago, the United States was the leader on solar energy. Back in the 90s, we were also the leader in wind energy. Now we're fifth in the world in both of those. China is now the world's leading manufacturer in solar, the world's leading manufacturer on wind. They are racing ahead of us. So this is an issue that should appeal to Tea Partiers, progressives, Democrats, liberals, conservatives. This is an economic security issue, and we're losing the race, and we're losing this race with China as well as other countries and throughout Europe.
I've heard two different expressions about what New Mexico could be. One is the Silicon Valley of clean technology, and the other, which you were telling me before, was the Saudi Arabia of solar.
Absolutely. New Mexico is the Saudi Arabia for solar. We have the very best solar resources in North America. We have high altitude. We're blessed with the clear skies that we see every day. And we have an incredible amount of land resources. There's another resource that we have here in New Mexico, and that's human resources. We have the national laboratories. So we really have the right ingredients to be the leader in the new energy economy. What we need is the right policies. And the policy that we put forward on climate is a really important step, because what it says to investors, what it says to venture capital, is that New Mexico is open for business and clean energy, energy efficiency, that we are going to prioritize moving away from fossil fuels. We're going to prioritize energy efficiency. We're going to prioritize the development of solar and wind. And that's what needs to happen.
It's just extraordinary to me that there is so little movement on the national level when there is so much reason to do it.
Yeah, the unfortunately, the Tea Partiers and the very conservative movement, which really doesn't represent mainstream America, they're dominating the conversation for a short-term political win, and we're missing out. If you look around the country, every single Senate candidate for the United States Senate right now is opposed to doing anything on climate change.
Well, that's not just Tea Party. That's the Republican Party, Tea Party or not.
Exactly. It is. And you have also some outlandish statements that are being made by some of the candidates. For example, Sharon Angle from Nevada saying that, "I just don't buy into the whole thing about man-caused global warming. It's a mantra of the left." You know, again, she's using it for short-term political gain, where it's going to have huge national security and huge economic impacts on the United States. We're seeing it right here in New Mexico, unfortunately, where every single congressional candidate from the Republican Party is opposed to doing anything on climate change. We have a candidate here for northern New Mexico that is saying we shouldn't be doing anything. We shouldn't be doing anything on climate change because it's frankly not happening. The gubernatorial candidate for the Republican Party, Ms. Martinez, saying we shouldn't be doing anything on climate change. It's going to hurt the economy.
Not only that, but she's saying that we should deregulate the oil and gas industries, which as far as I can tell basically means giving them carte blanche to dump waste wherever they want.
Dump waste, but it's also missing the larger opportunity around developing the solutions to climate change. The oil and gas industry has ample opportunities to reduce their emissions, and we showed this over the series of many months of expert testimony that the oil and gas industry can begin to capture methane that's leaking out of wells. It's cost effective. They can do this, and it can create, quote, green jobs in the oil and gas industry. They're going to be able to address climate change, save product and money, and be a part of the solution.
When we talk about a new energy economy, that's the name of the group that you are very much part of, what kind of ongoing jobs, let's say you make solar and wind farms and so on, what kind of jobs are created in the short run and in the long run by doing that?
A couple of years ago, I was out on the Eastern Plains. I was out in Tucumcari, and I was talking with a rancher, and he was kind of on the fence about whether climate change was happening. And he relayed a story to me, which I thought was very interesting. He said, "You know, John, if I were a chocolate maker, I wouldn't have to believe in the Easter Bunny to think that Easter is a good thing." And similarly, he said, "I have a lot of friends that don't necessarily believe in what's happening around climate change. They don't believe the science. But they see the economic benefits, that if we begin to create the solutions to climate change, we're going to be able to create huge wind farms across eastern New Mexico. We're blessed with incredible wind resources across New Mexico, especially in the east, and that's going to create thousands of new jobs. It's going to create new businesses. It's going to get ranchers extra income to be able to support really a dying industry out there." So there's jobs in the wind industry. There's jobs in the solar industry. As you mentioned, New Mexico is the Saudi Arabia for some for North America. We can be creating new industries, creating new businesses, attracting new businesses here to the state. For example, Austin, they have a municipally owned utility in Austin, and they've put up some small incentives saying that we want to begin to transition away from fossil fuels. Over the past several years, they've created 30 brand new solar companies. They've put up over 1,000 projects across Austin, and they've created more than 300 green jobs in Austin in the solar industry. We would be doing the same thing here in New Mexico if we had some good policies in place.
And, of course, there's a lot of people in construction who are out of work, and this is some of the ultimate construction jobs.
Well, the first place that we're going to see the effect of climate solutions is in the energy efficiency area. We're going to see an incentive to be able to begin reducing emissions from the construction industry, from our buildings, because buildings make up about one half of the global warming emissions in America and worldwide. So the first place to start is to begin to reduce emissions that come out of buildings, and that's where we can put out-of-work construction workers back to work. They can go into homes, they can begin to change out windows, begin to put in new insulation, be able to weatherize, be able to put in some small-scale solar systems. There's a whole host of opportunities that are going to be able to re-energize our building industry. In fact...
No pun intended.
Yeah, exactly. A month ago, we had hearings on our climate petition, and we had Renee Frank, who's a realtor from Las Cruces, drive all the way up here to give testimony. And Renee said, the future for our industry, for the realtor business, is in clean energy. It's in green building. And that if we begin to create the solutions to climate change, we're going to create a whole new industry in the building industry. And we're going to be able to put people back to work. It's going to help me as a realtor. It's going to help the out-of-work construction workers. So, again, we're seeing a broad range of people beginning to weigh in on this, whether they're security experts or they're realtors or they're farmers or they're ranchers.
You know, I heard on the radio the other day that the gubernatorial candidate, Susana Martinez, wants to do away with all the green building codes in New Mexico.
Yeah, it's
the opposite direction.
Again, it's using short-term political gain for the law, and it's going to sacrifice the long-term benefits for New Mexico. New Mexico actually was a pioneer in green building. If you go back to the 1970s, some of the first technologies on green building came out of the national labs. There were a lot of architects and builders that came here. There were a lot of solar entrepreneurs and the investors.
There were a lot of
hippies
who read the Whole Earth Review and took the ideas out of there and dug holes and made bricks and have solar houses that are standing today that use no energy at all. I know them personally.
Sure. That's one under the spectrum. And then you had nuclear physicists from Los Alamos National Labs developing very high-tech insulation. Developing brand new technologies for windows, developing new building materials. So we have had the whole gamut here, and we've really fallen behind. Again, I mentioned the Chinese earlier. They're moving ahead rapidly in not only clean energy, but they're also moving ahead in green building and energy efficiency. They're creating carbon-neutral cities. This is not a thing of the future. They're actually doing it. There's cities in the Middle East. They're making carbon-neutral cities in the Middle East where they're using passive solar and other technologies to be able to heat and cool their buildings.
And as we talked about, you were on very briefly the other day on this program that in places like California, you've got some real political conflicts going on, not between the environmentalists and the petroleum industry, but rather the venture capitalists and the petroleum industry. The venture capitalists want desperately to invest in clean energy, but the policies in the nation and in the states isn't allowing them to have a secure place to do so.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this on your show previously, that there was a meeting earlier in the year in New York City that brought together investors from around the world, from Germany, from Japan, from the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, the United States, and they represented $13 trillion of investment that is really just sitting on the sidelines right now. They're not ready to invest in clean energy, but they want to. And they said they want to see one policy enacted that would help them to begin investing, and that's a cap on carbon, a climate bill, because that provides the signal and the assurance that a state or a region or a country is getting serious about reducing fossil fuels and investing in clean energy. And so in California, for example, they passed in 2007 what was called the Global Warming Solutions Act, which would begin reducing emissions back to 1990 levels by 2020. And that's an important step. Entrepreneurs, investors started investing in California. The year after that bill was passed in 2008, there was over $3 billion worth of investment that went to California. And in fact, right now, almost two-thirds of the clean energy, clean tech jobs in America are in California. And that's after you had a bill like that passed.
So that could happen in New Mexico.
Absolutely, that could happen in
New Mexico.
Because
all these people are saying, oh, you can't do it unilaterally. You have to wait for federal legislation. But California has shown that not to be true.
Right, California is moving ahead. And again, you mentioned the showdown that's happening in California right now. It's pretty amazing where you have oil companies, specifically three oil companies. There's two oil companies in Texas, and then you have the oil company that's owned by the Koch brothers that have received a lot of play recently for supporting the Tea Party rallies and things like that. You have these three oil companies that are putting in $8 million to overturn the Global Warming Solutions Act. On the other side of the ring, you have venture capitalists. You have clean energy investors, and they're putting in millions of dollars saying, look, if we move forward on climate change, if we develop the solutions to climate change, it's going to be good for our economy. It's going to continue to create thousands and thousands of new jobs, and it's going to attract investment, the kind of investment that's going to keep our economy afloat.
John Fogarty is a family physician. He works with New Energy Economy. It's great to have you back on the show. Remind us once again, and I want to emphasize that for people who care about this issue and who feel powerless about it, which many of us do because we look at where the money is and money seems to buy power in this country, and it does buy power in this country, this is actually an opportunity where citizens can show up here in Santa Fe, New Mexico, have 3 minutes on the mic and say their piece, even if they're not experts. They just say their piece as citizens tonight and tomorrow at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, this is an extraordinary opportunity, actually. I think climate change, many people think climate change is a huge global issue. There's nothing that I personally can do as an individual. But here we have an opportunity where New Mexicans from all walks of life can come and present their personal opinion. It's simple. You just you have 3 minutes. You can say what you like about how New Mexico could be and should be a leader on clean energy, how we want to protect our land and our water for future generations. And they come to the old Para building at 1120 Paseo de Peralta at 7 o'clock tonight and 7 o'clock tomorrow night. They have an opportunity to speak. And they can see that they can make a difference because the Environmental Improvement Board is likely going to make a ruling within the next couple months. So here's an opportunity for citizens to have a profound effect on public policy, public regulations.
And for more information, people can go to newenergyeconomy.org. John Fogarty, thanks so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having me, Mayor Charlotte.
I'd like now to welcome to the program Tyson Slocum. He's the director of Public Citizens Clean Energy Program in Washington, D.C. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Yeah, great to be here.
So as we talked about with John Fogarty earlier, New Mexico is considering several possibilities for carbon caps and or cap and trade programs. And the people who are opposed to these programs are saying that states shouldn't take individual action in the absence of federal legislation. What is your take on that?
Well, I think if we wait for the federal government to take action, it might be too late. There's a 20-year history of states taking the lead on a number of progressive environmental and climate issues that ultimately led the federal government to follow those initiatives. So whether you're talking about the regional greenhouse gas initiative in the northeastern United States, in which many states participate in a cap-and-trade program in the electric power sector, or initiatives underway in California and the western United States, I think that it's important that states have the flexibility and opportunity to show leadership where our federal elected officials haven't.
New Mexico is a relatively poor state with a significant amount of jobs and revenue that come from the oil and gas industries. How do you see a state like ours? I mean, the states that you mentioned, I don't think they've really been so much oil and gas producing states. How do you see a state like ours developing a clean energy future with a viable economy and also balance the oil and gas industries that we have with new energies?
Sure. Well, first, California is actually a major oil and gas producing state. It produces far more oil and gas than New Mexico does. It also is a leader in clean energy technology. So I think that what the goal here is that you can understand that putting a price on carbon, instituting some strong regulations to try to reduce our use of fossil fuels is not going to put the fossil fuel business out of commission. It's just going to curtail its growth and eventually lead us to replace it with cleaner, more efficient technologies. We've got a number of federal research centers in New Mexico that ought to be hubs of clean technology innovation. And there's also a lot of opportunity in New Mexico for rooftop solar, some wind power, for geothermal. So just because, New Mexico currently is more dominated by oil and gas interests, doesn't mean that it always should be or is going to be. The future is renewable energy. Any way you look at it, fossil fuels are going to be extinct, just like the dinosaurs and plants that fed these fossil fuels. So the question is whether or not New Mexico and other states are going to assume a leadership role and position themselves to be at the forefront of these innovations, or whether or not they'll be playing catch-up.
When we talk about fossil fuels becoming extinct, what's the time? I mean, I know it's a question that can't be answered, but do we have any sense of how much of our world's gas and oil we've actually already taken out of the ground? I mean, how many years do we have left, even if we were, which would be terrible for climate change purposes, but even if we were to rely only on that, how many years do we have left?
I mean, we still have a lot of years left, especially with unconventional fossil fuels, like the tar sands up in Canada, or in shale gas formations. These are more problematic, more expensive ways to extract oil and gas. So there is a lot more environmentally damaging and expensive to get at fossil fuels. But the fact is that the planet is going to suffer irreparable harm if we continue to utilize fossil fuels at the rate that we have been. Climate change is real. It is caused in part by our record consumption and burning of fossil fuels. And we as a society need to start taking aggressive steps to utilize cleaner technologies, which are widely available. The question is whether or not we've got the political courage to change the rules and regulations to stop incentivizing fossil fuels and to start incentivizing cleaner technologies.
The Environmental Protection Agency issued an endangerment finding in 2009. What was that?
Well, what that was about was it was in response to a 2007 Supreme Court ruling that the Environmental Protection Agency has the authority under the Clean Air Act to regulate greenhouse gas emissions, just as they have the authority to regulate mercury and other harmful emissions from power plants and tailpipe exhaust. So what the EPA did was that they found that greenhouse gas emissions are endangering the environment and public health, and that sets the stage for the EPA to start issuing regulations to curtail our industrial production of fossil fuels. So that means all of the coal-fired power plants, all of the emissions from automobiles are going to be subject to Environmental Protection Agency regulations.
So they're going to, in other words, the EPA has taken the authority to regulate greenhouse gases. Are they already doing it? Where are we with that?
Well, they are in the process of putting together those rules. And so the coal and oil industries are trying to fight back by having their members of Congress that represent the coal and oil industries to try and block the Environmental Protection Agency from enforcing the law. So groups like Public Citizen and others are unified in our opposition to efforts to weaken the EPA's authority to protect public health through the regulation of greenhouse gases.
When you look at the gap between climate science, which is really completely, I mean, very definitive about human-caused climate change, on the one hand, and then legislative action or the lack thereof, on the other hand, in the United States, which is not the same as in other countries, how do you make sense of what's going on? Is it just pure and simple our lack of, corporate control of campaigns?
Well, there's no question that America's democratic republic is highly susceptible to influence and control by well-funded corporate interests. And that's been true for a long time, but last year's Supreme Court decision in Citizens United that now allows corporations to have unlimited free speech in federal elections, with free speech meaning money, we are already seeing radical transformations of our democracy where corporations are able to wield enormous influence, whether it's the Tea Party movement, which is well-established and well-documented that it is funded by oil and gas and chemical interests that are hostile to the notion of federal regulation at the expense of protecting the public health, or whether it's the billions of dollars in campaign contributions and corporate lobbying that the oil, gas, and coal industries are heaping on Congress every year, we have a crisis. And thankfully, we still do have elections where people are able to vote, and we've got to make sure that in these elections, politicians hear from the people and not just the big campaign contributors and the corporate special interests.
We're talking to Tyson Slocum, who's the director of the energy program at Public Citizen in Washington. You're in Washington, D.C. You're observing this. You testify before Congress. One of the many recommendations that Public Citizen has made is to end oil company subsidies, which seems like a rational path and even a popular path, which we seem to be unable to do as a nation. Talk about the economics of this, oil company subsidies, oil company profits, and the price of gas.
Sure. Well, the oil industry receives between $5 and $10 billion a year in subsidies courtesy of the American taxpayer. The largest subsidies of these are various special tax breaks and relief from having to pay royalties for the privilege of extracting oil and gas from federal land. Now, the Obama administration, to its credit, has put forward in both of his budgets proposals that would cut $35 to $45 billion in these oil company subsidies over 5 years. But Congress continues to fight efforts to cut back these subsidies. The most recent vote in June in the United States Senate failed by a wide margin to repeal just $3.5 billion in annual subsidies to the oil industry. So even after the BP disaster in the Gulf of Mexico, even after oil companies are consistently posting record profits while other sectors of the economy aren't, the oil industry continues to flex its political muscle in Washington, D.C., courtesy of its hundreds of millions of dollars in campaign contributions and lobbying. And again, I mean, I don't want to sound too cynical, but it's true that sometimes a very small group of special interests can subvert the entire democratic process to protect its own narrow interests at the clear expense of the greater good.
And no matter how the media are doing, the public don't seem to be able to apply enough pressure to our elected officials. How are the media doing? Are we on the level of, you know, the mainstream media, the big papers in D.C. and L.A. and New York and so on? How are we handling these questions that we're talking about right now?
Well, thankfully, we've got a number of not-for-profit, community-owned media outlets like this radio show I'm speaking on right now that have been essential in getting the truth out about our federal policies and the need to stand up to corporate power. Because whether you're talking about the huge corporations that control CNN and Fox and all the major newspapers, they often are not willing to stand up to the corporate power because they themselves are massive corporate entities. So there is a crisis in the United States where the media has not adequately responded to the gradual takeover of our democratic republic by very powerful corporate interests. And it's really important that folks support, you know, not-for-profit, community-owned media enterprises in order to preserve some means of communicating the truth about what's going on in Washington, D.C. But it also comes down to citizens getting engaged. There can be no daily democracy without daily citizenship. And that means it's incumbent upon all of us, all the people listening out there, to learn the issues, to talk about them with your friends, your coworkers, your neighbors, your family members, and to make sure that you make noise about the issues that are important to you and that you vote. Our voting registration rates and voter participation rates in elections continue to be at very historic lows, and it's really critical that folks be engaged politically, that you arm yourselves with the information you need, and engage others around you on all of these issues. Because the lower voter turnout is, the less engaged our citizenry is, the more powerful the special interests become.
As an observer of the legislature, you're in D.C., what do you think is, I know you can't predict the future, but the likelihood of federal climate legislation in the coming years? Do you see a growing traction for that, or is it just business as usual? What's going on?
Well, I do see a growing traction for it. I mean, we at Public Citizen, we've gotten behind a bipartisan Senate climate bill sponsored by Democratic Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington State and Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine. It's called the CLEAR Act. It would require all producers and importers of fossil fuels in the American economy to have to pay for a permit. That payment would go directly to the federal government. The government would then promptly refund about 75% of all the money it collects directly back to families in the form of a check. That would help the vast majority of families more than offset the rise in energy prices that would come from putting a new cost on fossil fuels, that they would be more than compensated with their monthly dividend check. And there'd still be billions of dollars left over each year for the federal government to directly invest in the development and deployment of renewable energies and energy efficiency. So we already have a bipartisan bill, and I actually think that there's fairly good prospects that that Congress could get some action, regardless of how the November 2nd election turns out, in the next Congress. But it just means that it's all the more important that New Mexico continue ahead with its efforts to try to put its own climate policy into place, because the more states that act on curtailing greenhouse gas emissions, the more successful pressure there will be for a federal policy, because the utilities and oil companies operating in New Mexico will run to Congress and say, look, we want to avoid what's going on in New Mexico. We want the federal government to act so we have a unified national energy and climate policy. So I think that there is a lot of importance to what's going on in New Mexico, not just for the merits of implementing the policy, but for the possible influence it could have in putting together a good climate movement at the national level.
We're talking to Tyson Slocum of Public Citizen in Washington, D.C. Okay, we talked a moment ago about oil company profits, and $5 to $10 billion of those profits are contributed by you and me as taxpayers, but nevertheless, there they are, making a ton of money. Even they must know that the future is in clean energy, both for climate change reasons and for the reasons that the whole rest of the world and a lot of the United States is demanding clean energy. Are they putting money into that? Are they putting money into wind and solar with their vast amounts of profits that they're making?
Yeah, they're not putting enough into renewable energy and energy efficiency. And that's because when you've got a $1 trillion infrastructure for fossil fuels, that's always going to win the day. Renewable technologies can stand on their own, can compete and win against fossil fuels if they're given an opportunity to do so in the marketplace. But the problem that we encounter on a daily basis is that if you're a giant electric utility, you have a business model to build gigantic centralized coal-fired power plants or nuclear power plants. And the last thing you want to do is see a series of incentives that would encourage households and small businesses to turn their homes and offices into independent power producers through the installation of rooftop solar, which at this point is cost competitive with new clean coal power plants or with new nuclear power plants. So the future is in decentralized, locally controlled energy sources, but the power structure of the energy industry actively fights against a decentralized system because it's in their business interest to preserve the centralized system. So it's really a constant fight, and we need to make sure that the average voter out there is engaged on these issues, knows the facts about the advantages of decentralized power systems like rooftop solar, advantages that has over what the utilities are promoting.
You know, when you do the math on this stuff, on the one hand, you make a big capital investment at the beginning if you want to put rooftop solar on your house, especially in a state like New Mexico where it's so sunny and everything. And then on the other hand, once you put it up, then you're just paying back your loan for the rooftop solar. And at a certain point, you break even and you are ahead. But still, you make a lot of money. You make tens of thousands of dollars, the person who is selling you these decentralized solar units. It seems like a great business.
Oh, yeah. This is where it could be a great engine of job creation. And again, for a utility that's seeking to build a new clean coal power plant or a new nuclear power plant, those utilities can't build those without massive government subsidies. So all of these new forms of energy are going to require some federal assistance. The question is, should we be delivering those subsidies to a handful of electric utilities, or should we be delivering that same dollar amount of incentives to millions of families and small businesses to enable them to create the same amount of power. To me, it's a no-brainer. The advantages to the economy, to working families, of incentivizing small-scale rooftop solar is huge compared to just shoveling the money as currently proposed to a handful of very powerful utilities.
There is always in my mind a red flag when people who profess to believe in the free market are actually looking at a market that isn't free at all, that's very much controlled and manipulated. And you've written extensively of the various ways in which that is true of the fossil fuel industries. It's not a free market system at all.
Right. I mean, when it comes to energy, there is active government barriers to alternatives. You know, we have in place massive government incentives to keep our addiction to fossil fuel going. And if you're a company like ExxonMobil or a giant utility, the last thing you want to see is the government effectively encouraging alternatives to your business model. So that's why the oil industry and the coal industry fight so hard against real effective development of renewable energy or investments in energy efficiency, because eventually it will mean the demise of the fossil fuel companies. And I'm not advocating for the oil companies and the coal companies to go out of business tomorrow, but there's no question that we're on an unsustainable path in terms of our consumption of fossil fuels. We're on an unsustainable path in terms of the catastrophic impacts of climate change from burning fossil fuels. And there is so much promise and so much deliverable technology today for renewables and energy efficiency that it is madness to not begin that transformation of our economy away from a fossil fuel one and towards a clean energy one. The barriers right now are educating the public and lawmakers and fighting the corporate special interests that continue to pull the strings in Washington, D.C. So that's what listeners out there need to understand, that we are in a fight for the future not only of the planet, but of the U.S. economy and of whether or not we're going to be at the forefront of creating the kind of jobs that are going to proliferate in the 21st century, or whether we're going to be stuck 19th century technologies. Granted, there's a lot of well-paying jobs right now in the petroleum sector. Those jobs aren't necessarily going to be there a generation from now. And it would be to the advantage of a state like New Mexico to get out in front of trying to incentivize the future of our energy system, which is going to be renewables and energy efficiency.
We've just got a half a minute left. I know there's a lot of people who are disappointed with the last 2 years of the presidential administration and Congress and so on. Can you just give them a good reason why they should go out tonight and tomorrow night to testify at these hearings here in New Mexico?
Because where Washington, D.C. has failed, New Mexico can lead. And so if folks feel frustrated at the lack of progress in Washington, D.C., you can get out and actually be part of putting New Mexico on the map as being a leader in 21st century clean energy development by getting out there and testifying and giving local politicians and regulators the cover they need to move forward aggressively with these first-in-the-nation regulations over greenhouse gas emissions. So it's really a great opportunity that New Mexicans find themselves in to help put their state in a leadership role. And it's something that could be a sense of pride for folks in the state.
Tyson Slocum is the director of Public Citizens Energy Program in Washington, D.C. And once again, tonight and tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, the public is invited to show up to testify on behalf of carbon regulation at the Old Para Building. For more information, you can go to newenergyeconomy.org. Tyson, thanks for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
It was my pleasure.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. And my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.